Hello, welcome to episode 15 of the V2 Academy. To me, I'm Chris Lappard, and I'm joined, as always, by Peter Prickett.
How are you doing this evening, Peter?
Very well, thanks. Good evening.
We're delighted to be joined on the line by Mark Lillis. How are you doing this evening, Mark?
Yeah, not too bad, okay. Just chilling out. What's the football? What's Bolton get? Decent result against Oxford 4-2, so still watching football.
Yeah. So to introduce Mark, Mark is the former Huddersfield Town Academy manager, and he played over 200 times for the Terriers. And he also played for Man City and Aston Villa. So, before we get into your coaching career, I just wanted to quickly ask about your experience as an apprentice at Man City in the 70s.
Yeah, it was truthful. I got released when I was 16 at Man City. I've been there since 14, and then I didn't get what they call an apprenticeship. And then I went around a few clubs. I think it was five or six Northwest clubs, Bolton, Burnley. And then my final trial was at Huddersfield Town, and I was going to pack it in and go. I got a job in the Daily Express as a messenger boy, but fortunately for me, Huddersfield gave me my break in football at 17 in 1977, and I got an apprenticeship there, and then made my debut at 18, and spent 8 great years there, and had fantastic. We had 2 promotions and learned my trade with Mick Buxton, the manager, and the staff. But Mick was fantastic for my career, so. The Man City thing was fantastic because I'm a Manchester lad, I'm a Man City fan, and to go back there a few more years later and sign for him and play at the top level for him was great for me. But good time, especially the Huddersfield apprenticeship, learned a lot.
Yeah, so how are the, and I'm guessing the training methods are completely set different to how they are these days for the apprentices.
I mean, apprentices, there was only 4 of us. We had 4. I mean, we had the Central League then, so when the first team played on a Saturday, the reserves in the Central League used to play at Anfield and Everton and Old Trafford. And, you played with, senior players who wasn't in the first team. And that's, I think, where you learn your trade. And I think it made you tougher as a 16, 17-year-old, 18, playing in that reserve league against, old pros who were coming to the end of their careers, who give you a whisper in there that are going to break your leg if you do it again, things like that. It was fantastic, and I think it made us all stronger mentally, physically as well. But the apprenticeship then, it was the training methods was, you had a trainer who, pre-season, the first 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, you didn't see football. You just run and run and run in Huddersfield. There's a lot of hills. Once you got your mileage in, that's what he used to say, you could get the ball out. So it was strange. And I remember so clearly in them days, the sun was out, we used to have a long break and the lads had come back, the senior lads were stone and a half overweight. And then when they started the first game of the season, they'd got down to the fighting weight. But there was no drink spray then, there was no rehydration, it was all just run, run, run. But it's mad, you couldn't have a drink, And then when you drank at dinner time, it was either fizzy pop or just water. So it was strange now, obviously, with all the new technology now and everything, and having drinks, but it's changed. But, I look at me, that's where I learned my trade, in 10 years at Huddersfield, and stood me in good stead for my career. I'm still in it, so that's good for me.
Do you feel that modern academy players could cope with the 70s coaching methods these days?
70s, 80s, no, I don't think so. I don't know. It's, the game's changed now. I've worked in the academy and I work with young players. I'm working with young players and developing them. I like working with young coaches as well. But all the method now, I would think now the apprentices that are now are all, fitter than, maybe fitter than we was, or maybe more quicker. I don't know whether stamina or long-term fitness, because we did a hell of a lot of running and got mileage in our tanks, but it's changed ever so much. But you have to go, you go along with it, and if it does you well and improves you, you go with them methods. I remember talking to Martin Keown, who was a teammate of mine at Villa when he went with Wenger at Arsenal, and he said he's changed, and he reckons he put 3 or 4 years on his career just looking after his body.
Yeah.
I know when we was 16, 17, 17, 18, and after the first team game, you know, the lads would go to the pub to refuel. You know, they'd have 4 or 5 pints and go for a curry. You know, now it's straight away, you know, you've got to eat within 30 minutes, an hour of the game, carbohydrates inside you, you know, rehydrate, and then you're in on the Sunday to warm down. So it's a lot, massively changed, but, you know, it's good.
So you retired from playing in 1995. Was getting into coaching always the plan?
Yeah, I think it was. When it was more near the end of my career, I think it was at Stockport County, Danny McGarry, God rest his soul, he had a chat with me and just said, I was having massive problems with my hamstring, I've got screws in my back, I've got a dodgy knee, so he just said, look, you know, you need to, you know, start having a think what you want to do. And I remember driving back home one day thinking, God, what am I going to do for the next 20, 25 years? Because in them days, you know, we weren't millionaires, you know. I decided to take on the badges, and I got them quickly with the PFA, and then started my coaching career in about 93, 94 at Macclesfield.
Yeah.
With Sammy McElroy. We had a good run there. We won the conference, which was good. And then I went to Huddersfield as a community officer, and then got as a youth coach. But I always wanted to test myself working with first team players, and I went back to my old club, Scunthorpe, with Brian Laws as the manager, and we ended up getting promotion in 99 and just stayed in the game. You know, it's gone the full circle with working with academy players now and being in and around the EPP. You know, really enjoying that, got good knowledge of that. So, you know, I think when you're a player as well, you look to go into coaching because, you know, you want to pass on to young players. And I said to a few lads in the week, I was doing a Q&A, that, you know, sometimes as a coach you got more joy winning a final or a promotion than you did as a player. It's strange to say it, but, you know, all them things, you've helped part of the team, part of the first team, and you've got promotion, it gives you more of a buzz than when you're playing and got promotion. Mm. It's just strange, really, but it's good to have. It's good memories. I mean, I look back at my career for inspiration, you know, to see, you know, things that you've done and the achievements you've made, and you've got to stay positive, especially these days when you're out of work. You know, I know friends of mine have got a little bit depressed and, you know, switched off and fell out of love with football, but you've just got to keep positive every day, and hopefully the phone will ring and you're back in again and you're up and running.
So what are the major differences between coaching senior players to coaching at academy level?
I think at academy level, you're developing the boys, you're developing, you're teaching them all about the game. With the first team level, I mean, I coached in the Premiership when I was at Derby with Robin Everink, Ken Klasky and Rob Lee, Warren Barton. You know, you just manage them. When you're working with the first team, you manage them because they know you manage them. And the sessions that you put on, they've got to be challenging for them, you know, because they're playing at the height of the top level. With the young players, you know, you've got to have care with them. You've got to give them a good environment and an environment where they feel that there's no fear. You know, they can express themselves. And every one of them is differently. You've got to, you know, ones need an arm round, some of them need a kick up the bum, and then some need just a chat. You can't really have a, you know, I never slaughter young players because I love working with young players because, you know, I learn off them and they keep me young as well, which is good. But I think with the senior end, you're just managing that game on a Saturday because you've got to win. With the, you know, the development, I think there's a line where you've got to develop young players, but also you've got to give them a winning mentality as well. So that's juggling that in the weeks and then on match days. But, you know, I used to call it the dance floor. You know, I still do it. That's their dance floor. Go and dance and enjoy and have no fear. You know, don't make a mistake and be looking at the dugout, you know. Because when we played, you know, you got a lot of stick from the dugout, you know, if you give the ball away. But I try to get an environment there at Huddersfield where, you know, if they try things, you know, we used to have, you know, you have these possession games where you put people on two-touch, three-touch, and I just said, no, all my dribblers in the team, you're all in, because that's what you're good at, that's what we've got to promote, that all your strengths and that, and the things that you need improvement on, we'll work with you every day.
So Huddersfield were a Category 2 academy. Could you quickly take us through what the different categories are?
Yeah, we've got Category 4, Category 3, Category 2, and Category 1. Cat 1's a, you know, Everton, Liverpool, Man City, Man United, Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea. When I came, I was working in Spain in La Manga Academy there. When I came back to Huddersfield and got the academy manager's role, and this is when the EPP had just come out, the Elite Player Performance Plan. And when I looked at it, I didn't really have a good understanding of it. And I said to the chairman, Dean Oyle, that Cat 1, you know, we'll have no chance to getting it because there's a lot of facilities that you have to do. You have to teach in the education side. It costs a lot of money. Category 3 and 4, you know, I might as well stay in La Manga in Spain because I was enjoying the work there. Category 2 said it'll be a challenge for us, but, you know, we'll have to get there. At that time, we had 6 members of staff full-time at the academy. And with the new EPP rules, needing more staff, we went from 6 to 19 full-time members of staff. You know, we got Category 2 status in about 5 months. I came in January, and then we got audited in May. So we had to have all the information. And I could speak for hours and hours about the EPP, but, you know, there's a lot of people say it's good. There's a lot of people say it's not been good. But, you know, you have to get on with it. It's there. It's not going to go away. And fortunately, we the chairman backed us, and we had to change all our facilities. International 3G pitches, dressing rooms, education rooms, sports science, more coaches around the young players. You know, we have the professional development phase and youth development phase and foundation phase. So it was good for the coaches because they got jobs because, you know, it was full-time roles.
All right, so I'll pass you over to Peter for a few questions.
Yeah.
Okay, no problem.
Hi, how you doing? I think that's very interesting because I think a lot of people, I've read the EPP thing myself, they don't realise that it's not the size of the club that dictates what category you are. It is what facilities do you have, how many coaches are you employing, how many games you play, all that sort of thing contribute. And people out there just think, oh, they're a big club, they must be category one. Well, no, not if they're not providing the correct facilities. It's possible for any club to be category one as long as they can actually afford to deliver what's stated.
Yeah, it's the requirements, exactly. I mean, we was on a different training ground and we moved to the main one where the first team was training because I believed in that. I felt that the young players to be around the first team environment was important. But in that, you know, like you said, we had to have dressing rooms, we had to have the analysts, the education side of it. You know, you couldn't, when you got audited, you couldn't say, oh yeah, we've got a full size pitch that'll be built next week. You know, it was there. The evidence, you had to produce the evidence, and it was a tough audit. But like you said, you're exactly right. The EPP, if you don't hit the requirements, you don't get the category.
Yeah, and it is a misconception. It's big clubs. It's not just about big clubs. But speaking of the big clubs,
no.
You guys at Huddersfield, you've got some serious competition in terms of having to recruit players. You've got Leeds just down the road, got even Manchester United, they're only 40 odd minutes away. What did you guys do to make yourselves attractive?
I think the thing is the environment, right? We created an environment which was a safe environment where the players could come with freedom, and I always said it would be like, you know, when you're in the playground at school, or, you know, you want to go next day. I wanted the players to leave, get in the mum and dad's car, want to go back the next day and train again and enjoy it. And that was what I taught the coaches and all my staff. You know, the environment's got to be right, and also pathways. So if, you know, if we had 16-year-old lads and they were playing in the 21s, you know, they deserve it. You know, that's what it was. It wasn't how old you are to play games. It was, you know, really how good you are and if you deserve to be there. But yeah, you're right what you said, exactly. And I just think they could create an environment. We had Man City, we had Everton, we had Liverpool, we had United, we had lads, big teams coming to take players. I think there I lost the number 12 to Everton, which was one of their best ones, which it was an eye-opener for me. And, you know, the main thing was, you know, giving them lads every chance. I mean, we were talking the other day, I think, at the minute we had an objective that if they don't make the first team in the Championship, that they get careers elsewhere. And I think we had 11 lads the other day playing in the Football League, League 1 and League 2. And that was from goalkeeper Lloyd Allenson, was at Chesterfield, he made his debut. And that was the thing that I cared about, really passionately about, that if they don't make a career at Huddersfield, that they make, you know, we give them careers in the Football League. That's what it's about. And if they can't make, you know, they don't make it to football, or that, you know, we're producing men, you know, we're producing players that can go to for an interview at a job, and the guy who's interviewing says, God, you know, I want to employ this guy, he's a good man, you know, we wanted good values, shake their hand on the morning and talk properly and behave properly and, you know, do it properly. And that's that's what it created there. And I think it went round, you know, I remember talking to a Cat 1 academy manager who was in London, and he just said, oh, you've got an identity now, people know about you, because the under-21 started, you know, they mixed the league up, so we played down south 8 times a season, and the southern lads had come to play down north. And I think that was fantastic experience to develop for me, because all of a sudden you go in an overnight stop at a hotel like the first team do, so you try and create that so they learn. So if they do get in the first team and they travel away with the first team, they know how to expect, they know what time the meal is on the evening, they know what to eat, what time to go to bed. So that was good with the EPP. I thought that was very good. And, you know, we had some good success there. You know, people tell me it's not about winning, it's about developing. It's both. You know, we won, you know, a few leagues, and we won the double with the 21s. So, it was really good, and I'm pleased with what happened there.
Well, I think again, it's all about opinions, but we talk about development. I've asked the question of other people: what point does the focus shift? So, obviously, most coaches would agree with the younger ones, with your young ages. Don't worry about the winning so much. Get the skills in them, get them loving the game, great. But at some point, what are they training for? Eventually, it's to be successful footballers, and to be successful, you've got to win games. At what age?
I think you're right what you say. You know, I've been a first team manager, I've been a caretaker manager in the Championship 4 times, and you know, at the end of the day, when you speak to chairmen and directors and staff, when you you're turning out at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, you know, your first point of call, you've got to try and get 3 points and win. And if you can develop winning mentalities, and that sometimes is by developing but also winning games. And I think, like you said, you know, the young ones, you know, they come in and like they say at the playground, they can form I think the youth development phase. I think when they start getting a little bit older, 15, 16, when they come to be apprentices as well, you know, they've got to know, we've got to keep them developing. But, you know, we've got to be able to develop players that can play in the first team and in the Championship in the way that, you know, the system is with the first team. But I think, like you said, you've hit home on the EPP. I think that's very good. But, you know, I think, like I said, it's getting that balance, and you can only get that balance working every day on the football field with the young players, and then you pass them over to the first team when you feel that they think they're ready. And I think that's a good thing about training and in and around the first team, that first team manager and his coaches and assistant can actually see the players, they can have a walk over and actually see the players working, and you know, they'll invite them in to train with the first team lads for a week or two. And if they come back to the youth team and the 21s, it's not a failure. It's just dipping them in and dipping them in, and then when the manager feels right, he can handle the Championship. But like I said, I mean, I'm in my debut 18, but you know, how do you know when a player's ready? You have to give them an opportunity to play in the first team, and then if they handle it, they go on and make a career of it. I mean, I worked with Tom Huddleston at 16, 17 at Derby County when he was coming through. And, you know, he was the same then at 16, 17 as he is now, the same frame, the same build, played the same, and done well for himself.
Well, sorry, slightly off, going to Tom Huddleston, there was a time when people thought he was going to be a centre-back, didn't they?
I said to him one day, I said to him, look, pulled him aside, because I watched him when I was working with him, especially in games, because you see a lot more in games if you have 11 v 11s on the field. As a coach, I used to step back and go around the different areas of the pitch where I could watch players in different positions. So I won't be a coach, just stood on the side. I'd be walking around and going behind the goal and see how the defenders defend crosses and that. I remember saying to Tom, if you want to play at the top level and you want to, you know, make yourself a few quid in the game now, which you can, young players can be millionaires within 3-4 years. You know, that's what it is. I said, you know, you need to start making an impact on the top end of the field, but also you need to make an impact on your defensive side. And if you can get them and create goals and maybe pop one in yourselves and that, get out the field quicker, you'll have a chance. And people say, oh, he'll be a centre-half. Yeah, he could play centre-half. Yeah, most of the academics here, he can play centre-half because he can read the game well. But, you know, for him to take the advice on like he did, I'm one coach that worked with him. He's had loads of coaches that have worked with him, but I think what he's done is he's done fantastic, and he's had a good career. And like you say, if he would have played centre-back early in his career, would he have made an impact? I'm not sure he would have got through as quickly as he did at playing in midfield.
Well, I think it's another example, which if people dig around
even when I was working with top players, when they were playing, if they made a shot or goal and missed, the first, I say on Match of the Day now, the first thing they do is they look over to the dugout, you know, and if you've got a coach with putting his hands on his head and looking up at the stars, the sky and all that, what confidence does that give a player, a young player? Well, not a young player, even a senior player. So that comes a lot, that fear factor comes a lot in from, you know, that environment where, you know, they know that it's about, you know, at that, well, any age, decision making is massive. The top players make the right decisions at the right time. The top players that I've worked with make the right decisions at the right time. And especially young players, if we've got young players coming through and there's coaches out there just slaughtering them every day, and it's going to be fair. You're going to lose confidence in yourself. You've got to give them the most platform where they can be themselves. You know, don't come in and put an act on, you know, be yourself. So I used to say that to my staff, come in every day to work and be yourself. Don't go home to your family and your kids and say, how's it gone today, dad? Well, they're all right. Be yourself. If you've got anything to say, bring it to the table. And it's like that with young players. You know, the big thing is, you know, giving them belief, you know, thumbs up, you know, when they miss the chance. Or maybe there's times when you can get them on a one-on-one and just say, look, you know, they might be going through a, you know, a difficult spell, but that might not be football. They could have problems off the field. You know, we don't know what's happening with mum and dad, if there's been any trauma in the families. You know, I was massive on that Huddersfield. Get to know the player. You know, don't get a rapport with the laptop. Get a rapport with the player and get to know about his family. Get to know who his supporters and who his family was. You know, was he any footballers? Did his granddad play football? Get to know that. But I used to make sure that you know what's going off. Because when they leave the training ground, especially young players, social media now, you can see where they are, some of them need more education on that, but get to know, because, you know, they might be fearing them where, you know, something's happened at home, you know, the parents may be split up, you know, so get to know the full package with them and create an environment where they come in and they smile every day, and even if they don't make it, I mean, I've released lads, and we've shook hands and had a hug, and we've tried to get them another club more down, and we've kept in touch, and they know that, you know, we're there for advice, we're there the phone. Anytime you want to ring us, ring me, especially now I'm at work, I can take any call I want. I'm passionate about that.
Chris, I'll give it back to you.
All right, so before we finish, do you want to plug your social media, or any websites you're involved with? Or?
I've obviously got a Twitter account, but I used it a lot because I knew a lot of the younger players would look at that, especially I used to comment on after we'd played a game on a Saturday morning, because the coaches with Tony Carrs and Lee Bromley, Frankie Bunn, Steve Eyre was with me as well. You know, they used to take the team, and being an academy manager, you know, I used to make a comment, and it was always constructive. Even if we'd lost, we'd drawn, or we'd won, it was constructive. And if we hadn't played well and won, I'd still make sure that they knew that, hey, you know, that's not us at our best. But I use that social media really just to give them that, you know, information where, you know, coming from the top, how we were feeling. So, you know, I believe social media now is, everyone's got the phones and all that, but, you know, it's not going to go away. It's there, you know, you've got to be able to manage it. And we had some good people come in and, you know, give them workshops on the social media and how to behave on there and what to do. So Cathy Wood, who goes around and gives workshops, was fantastic with them. And the social media, yeah, I have a Twitter account, but I use it positively, especially for the young players who I work with. And still now, if one of them leave and make the debut, I'll always comment on it and say, well done, good, keep it going. You'll be fine. So that's all I use my social media for.
Yeah. Alright, so I've really enjoyed speaking to them. I'm sure Peter has to that as well.
Yeah, very interesting. Thank you very much.
I'd love to have you on again in the future.
No problem, anytime. Anytime, no problem, guys.
And a huge thank you for Mark for joining us this evening. Next week we have Gerard Jones returning. So that should be a fun interview. So, good night.